Hello everyone, and welcome to this very special New Year's edition of The Stagey Place with me, Elliot, where in today's episode you get to hear my chat with choreographer Chris Whittaker, who's currently working on Gatsby the Musical, being staged at the Southwark Playhouse in London. Before all that though, I hope you had a restful period over these past few weeks, catching up with friends, family, binging the latest Netflix series, watching Half a Sixpence or Anything Goes, which were both broadcast over this time, or spending your time on walks or seeing your local pantomime. Whatever you did, I hope it brang you joy and you're ready for what 2022 may bring. With so much planned and booked in for this upcoming year, I cannot wait to take you guys along for the ride, and hopefully being able to interview a few of those creators along the way. But back to today's episode, and here's my interview with Chris Whittaker. Chris, welcome to The Stagey Place. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks very much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. Today we're going to be chatting about your role as choreographer with Gatsby the Musical, which is playing at the Southwark Playhouse this festive period. But Chris, before we begin with talking about the show, I wanted to ask you what your influences were when you were younger, whether this was something that you looked up to with admiring their work, or a show that made you go, wow, and then made you want to step into the industry as part of theatre.
Yeah, so I never really wanted to be a choreographer. Like when I was little, I always just wanted to be a dancer and work in musicals. And choreography is just something that kind of became a natural progression later on. But I've always admired Matthew Bourne. And that's kind of been my, you know, because when I was growing up, sort of early 90s was when I got into dance and started dancing a lot. And that's when he was just kind of launching Swan Lake, Nutcracker was coming out, and they toured to our local theatre. I'm from Stoke, and I remember Swan Lake coming up to the Regent Theatre up in Stoke. You know, it was a new theatre, it had just been refurbished, and I got to go and see it. So it was amazing being in this, you know, 2,000 seat auditorium and watching this. And it was the first time I really became aware of dance as a narrative instrument, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like actually being able to use dance to tell a story rather than dance just being the thing that you look at that's pretty in a musical, which is kind of what I'd always just seen before. And so that kind of really captured me. And that's something that then now looking back as a choreographer, I look at and go, I notice it more now, the influence it had on me, than I ever did at the time.
Yeah.
Constantly revisiting his stuff and seeing the new work that he puts out. And someone who's not just rested on one show and has just constantly developed and evolved and pushes the boundaries now. And, you know, the pieces he did coming up to 30 years ago now are even more relevant now than they ever were is amazing. So it's something that I really kind of look up to and aspire to, and kind of every time I kind of get into something and go, right, how can I make this my version of something like that?
Yeah. And then so how did you then progress into then becoming a choreographer? What stages with training especially?
Yeah, so I trained in musical theatre. I went to London Studio Centre. So I was really, really heavy on the dance front of things. And that was always kind of my go-to. Like my singing was pretty shocking and my acting probably even worse. So I always knew that dance would be my strength in things. And, you know, I had a relatively good career as a performer. I was really proud of the work I did. And then I met a choreographer called Adrian Edmeads, who needed, this is a rose random thing, he needed a dancer for the Phantom of the Opera entry for West End Eurovision one year. And I was bar manager at Phantom at the time at Her Majesty's. And they were like, yeah, that's a close enough link. You can come and do it. So I did that with him, and then we developed a really lovely relationship. He took me on to be his dance captain on a panto in Reading, and then year on year that relationship grew and I became his associate for a number of years. And then after that, I got trusted with my own show. A producer called Ray Rackham trusted me with Assassins at the Pleasance in like 2010, I think it would have been. And that was my first ever show as a choreographer. And it just kind of went from there.
It's amazing also that you've just spoken there about being working in front of house. I'm sure a lot of people who listen to the podcast, I've done a lot of front of housing before in the past. You know, it is kind of that thing where it's the closest we can get to being on stage or working, you know, within that main house auditorium. And then suddenly you've then been propelled into West End Eurovision through that small link. But I guess in a way you are still part of that Phantom of the Opera team back then, because you were working in the building that the show was on in. A lot of people go through front of house as their like muggle jobs, as some of us like to say. But I feel like it's always really important to talk about the stuff that we do when we're not doing our, you know, our main jobs, especially in those early careers.
Yeah, definitely. So I spent I think I spent more time working front of house than I ever did as a performer. Like, and I'm not ashamed to say that in any way, shape, or form, and I don't think anyone should be, because I met some of my greatest friends there, and I also did so much networking there, and that's where I got my first, what I'd consider the sort of my big choreography show. So I was working, I've basically worked at any really useful theatre. So I started at the New London, I did the Palladium, I did the Adelphi, I did Her Majesty's. I don't think there's many that I didn't do. But then I went and worked at the now known as the Other Palace, but back when it was the St. James. I was bar manager there, and I remember choreographer Racky Plews came in to watch a show one night, and I'd met her a couple of times. We were sort of close, and her family obviously run upstairs at the gatehouse. And she said, "Oh, we're doing Singing in the Rain this Christmas. You should come in and audition for the lead." And then she went off, she dropped that bombshell and then went off to watch the first act. And when she came back out, I was mulling that over, and she came back out for the interval, and I said, "Really cheeky, but do you know if they've got a choreography for it yet?" Because I thought, I'm never going to get the lead in a show like that. But actually, I'd quite fancy choreographing it. She's like, "Oh, I don't know. I'll speak to my mum." So she set up a meeting, and 2 weeks later, I was announced as choreographer on Singing in the Rain, which then got me, my first Offie nomination. And I got down to the finals for that with Drew McConey and Lee Proud, which meant that I got to meet them. And kind of, it's just crazy the way things work in front of house, and the people you meet on a daily basis. And, I see people now who are now like the leads in films and big blockbusters. I'm like, well, I remember them selling ice creams and programs with me 8 shows a week, and it's, you never know. And it's such a lovely community. And you're right, you do still feel like part of the family of the show that you're working on, especially at places like Her Majesty. We all went drinking after the show every night, and you do feel a small part of that cog, that churns out the show every night. So it's a great place to be.
Exactly. And it's always a creative team, front of house as well. So whenever you have that downtime, you're always trying to find time to help work within the industry and
Yeah,
finding jobs for other
definitely.
people. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think one of the best examples for me is that Adam Pearce, who's now obviously one of the leads in Prince of Egypt and has had one of the most incredible careers. Like, he did something like 4 shows back to back at the Adelphi and ended up having a dressing room named after him. But he, whenever he wasn't working, he was straight back to front of house. And he actually worked front of house at the Adelphi on the next show after he'd just closed. I think he'd just closed Evita or Sweeney Todd or something. And the next week they had a new show going in, and he was working front of house with us. And I was like, that is the epitome of like a working, hardworking, amazing person. Like, not ashamed in any way, shape, or form, not thinking he's too good for it. It was just incredible. And that's what this industry is like for the good people, like the hard workers in the industry. They'll just go back to grafting the next day, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, Chris, we're talking today because you're the choreographer of Gatsby the Musical. So Gatsby the Musical saw previous success as a sellout concert at the Crazy Cocks in Piccadilly and an online streamed concert performance at the Cadogan Hall. Now coming to the Southwark Playhouse for in-person audiences again, what excites you the most with this as a choreographer?
So my journey with this show actually started about 7 years ago. There was a version of it that they did at the Arts Theatre. It sat on top of American Idiot. So American Idiot didn't play Mondays, so we'd do Monday nights for about 6 weeks, I think. So that was kind of my first introduction to the show. And it's been reworked and revamped ever since, as you said, at at Cadogan and Crazy Cox. And Linny, the writer, got back into and director, got back in touch with me about a couple of months ago now and said, "Look, we're redoing it. We'd love to get your work back in." And it's going to the Southwark and at the Little. And I thought, yeah, brilliant. And it's just amazing now to finally have shows that are going back in front of people again. And I know that kind of sounds cliche, and but we've all spent 2 years, grafting, creating work for streaming, working at colleges, and just trying to find any way to make work and do what we know and love. So to be able to do a nice long run, it's doing a good month over Christmas, amazing cast. And it is Gatsby, but it's not Gatsby that people know. It's kind of like a sequel to Gatsby. It follows more into Daisy's story and what happened after all the parties ended. So it's nice to not just be churning out another Gatsby, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's funny that you were just saying that it was on top of American Idiot, because it's a good job that it wasn't on at the same time and there were two spaces to perform it in, because I know American Idiot the musical, and it would definitely not work if they were playing at the
No,
same time.
not in the slightest.
And also, I know that you just said that it's cliché there about seeing audiences again coming in person. I think it's really lovely also that whenever somebody puts it on social media that they're coming for their first like in-person audition, or they've got their first show in 18 months, people might think that it's quite sickly because they're like, yeah, well, theatre's been back open for 6 months or 8 months or whatever. Like, that's old news now that people are now back in person. But for some people, it really means a lot that, they're able to be seen, or their work's able to be shown again for the first time in so long.
Yeah, it is, and it's people never knew what was going to be, I'm sure in 6 months' time we'll all be fed up of talking about it now, but people never knew what was going to be coming back. Like, so many people left the industry, and so many people thought that that was it. Like, I had so many shows cancelled that I was supposed to be doing. Like, I never knew what was going to happen. I'd spent so long working on a career that I just kind of went, what does happen now? And I've been very fortunate, it has come back. It's come back really strong, and I'm very, very fortunate. And, I'm aware of that. But every show you get now does still feel like, A, will it go ahead? Will we make it? But also, how amazing that we are getting to go back into these rooms again and do this and work as we always did, because you didn't know how it was going to come back. It could have been that streaming was going to be the only way forward. But to be going back in and going back into these intimate venues like the Little at Southwark, which is a brilliant venue, and create these works with such an amazing cast. You don't normally get this sort of stellar cast at a venue like that. So to be able to do that is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I had talks about doing Panto this year in February, so the very beginning of this year, when nobody really knew what was going to be happening. We were still very much in the midst of the pandemic, and then having excitement from that after that meeting is absolutely fantastic. And I was like, yes, I'd love to do Panto. Again, this was in February this year. There was still obviously that doubt because nothing at all was open at this point. So we were like, well, yeah, just in case, COVID does go away by this point. Or, is settling or whatever. But, there is still that kind of doubt of going, are we just going to be doing stream theatre? There are a lot of people who have left the industry because they realise how unsustainable it can be. Even though it's like our biggest passion and something that we strive towards, it is the hardest thing to probably get back into because the money isn't going to be there straight away. It's inspiring to see people that have returned and are still chucking everything they have at these projects. I do think that also, though, that we should be discussing about how we are now that we have returned into this industry, because we are so resilient after having 18 months off of theatre. There's a lot of well-being for you, Chris, coming back into this industry. Have you been thinking a lot about how your well-being is coming back?
So I kind of my body took a while to get warmed back up again. It's especially noticeable for a choreographer when you end up having to get people to dance together, because you really notice how some people are still dubious and nervous about that. Like, you've got all these amazing testing, like, and theatre's been brilliant about testing cast members and, stringent rules, and most shows have a COVID officer on them, and it's every precaution is being taken. But it's still, when you ask people to dance together and you're like, do you guys want to rehearse it apart from each other? Do you want to rehearse, wearing masks, wearing gloves? What do you want to do? And you kind of think, I can never imagine saying that 2 years ago. Like, you just go, right, well, you two kiss over there, you two go in. Like, I did the Wild Party at Royal Academy with Hannah Chiswick, and the things we had people doing in that show, you can't believe it now. Like, you think, what on earth were we doing? And then you're coming back and you're just worried about people standing next to each other. So yeah, it's that mentality. And then, yeah, people doing 8 shows a week, you suddenly go, that's a big old ask, who haven't done anything. And a director I worked with quite a while ago refers to it as match fitness, and being ready to go and do that 8 times a week. And a 3 week rehearsal period, you think, oh, that's ages, but that's to get your body back to the peak physical shape and readiness and vocal readiness and stamina. And it's a big ask from people. So that is something I'm really aware of and really trying to kind of have as an open discussion within the room, because I think that's really important for everyone to know that we're not expecting you on day one to be that person you were if it's your first show back.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fantastic. And obviously to hear that from a creative who is running these rehearsals, like it must be such a welcoming feel to come back into that room and have those discussions. And like you say, some people will still want to be wearing their masks. Some people, like you say, maybe want to be wearing gloves if they're touching other people or holding hands. It's just about having that conversation and feel like the whole room are in this together. Like, that's absolutely fantastic. Well, we are talking about Gatsby the musical, and I know that you just said in a previous answer just then that it's a very different Gatsby to what people may think. So Tell me, Chris, what this Gatsby the Musical is like, and what will audiences be expecting coming in to watch the show?
So it's got some of the Gatsby that you all know and love and that you come to expect. Like, it does have insights to the parties, but it's not sort of the rip-roaring 20s for the entire thing. It has that, but it has flashbacks and flash forwards. Is it flash forwards? Is that still a thing? Who knows? Flashback and then whatever the reverse of that is. Kind of it takes you back into the heart of Gatsby and the parties and what everyone was going through at that. But then it also takes you to the aftermath and kind of what happened after those parties stopped and what happened to those characters. Because kind of everyone just goes, well, the book ends and that's it. What happened to those relationships that got torn apart? What happens to those people that suddenly lost their entire social world and were just left in this hiatus? And it's that coming out of Prohibition, which for me is just as exciting. Kind of speakeasies are really wonderful things, and speakeasies and that whole Bugsy Malone feel of kind of Prohibition era is great. But then when it was legalized again, like, just imagine the fun must have been had then when it was finally legal to go and drink. So it's kind of looking at that. So there's still sort of some of the big musical numbers that you'd expect from a Gatsby, but then there's also some really good niche little look-ins and snippets of what happened to the rest of the world.
Yeah, amazing. And for you as a choreographer, Chris, what advice would you give to your younger self, let's say, coming into this industry that you've learned and, want to pass on to a new generation of choreographers?
For the choreographers, I'd always say, whenever I do a masterclass or anything, which makes me sound a lot more important than I actually am, I always say, like, go and experience the industry first. Like, even if you know and choreography is your absolute everything, and you know that that's exactly where you want to be, I only want to be a choreographer, that's great. But whilst you've got the time and the freedom and you're young, go and perform, go and try an audition, go and do those random jobs that pay £1.50 that, like, I'm not saying go and work for nothing, but I mean, go and do the small jobs where you're kind of pushed to your limits as a performer, because then you'll know what is capable as a choreographer.
Yes,
Because for
yeah.
me, I find that you get choreographers that ask them to do the world, like, can you do a double backflip and then sing this top C whilst you're doing it? And then we're all going to go into 32 fouettés. And I'm like, that looks amazing. But sustaining that 8 shows a week or sustaining that once is so hard. So I rely on the fact that I know what, as a performer, I was capable of, and what makes a good show 8 times a week rather than something that's filmed once and then they never have to do again.
Yeah.
And also, I know what it's like to audition as a performer, and I know what it's like to audition as a creative, like to be on both sides of the table. So I hope that when I take auditions, I make it the most comfortable room I can to get the best out of people. But that comes from my experience as a performer. So for me, it's go out and yeah, be a choreographer, do that. That's amazing. But have some experience as a performer as well so that you can draw on that. But also, it makes you realize what you want to be as a choreographer. Because I've worked with choreographers that I go, I love their style, but I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that in a room, or I don't want to create that kind of work. So I know to avoid that now as a choreographer. But if I hadn't, I wouldn't know those things.
Yeah, and I think, it just goes back to the answer that you were giving about coming back after the industry, that stamina of keeping your stamina up for 8 shows a week. I would never have thought about that answer about being, doing the smaller jobs, doing the stuff that would actually push you to your limits, because you're absolutely right. You need to know your limits first, coming in as a cast or a creative, to then know what you can then push towards your
Yeah, you've got to
cast.
know what you're asking people to do. And if you've never done it and you go, well, why can't you do that?
Yeah.
It just puts a barrier between the two sides that doesn't need to be there. Whereas if you're someone who's evolved through, and I'm not saying you have to have done the West End, because I never really did as a performer. I did a couple of big galas, but I never did a long run in the West End or anything. So I'm not saying that you have to do that, but I know what is capable as a performer, so it's a really lovely hybrid of the two.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much, Chris. And thanks so much for coming on to this podcast. But before you leave, I've got one final question for you. And it's about the title of this podcast, which is called The Stagey Place. What I want to ask you is where your stagey place is. So this could be the place where you first saw your favorite show. Maybe it was the first Matthew Bourne show you saw, and it was in this venue that you remember wholeheartedly. It could be the first place that you first had your first gig as a choreographer or a performer. It could be Her Majesty's, where you first found all these little bits and bobs of work. Or it could just be the place, and it doesn't have to be a venue, but a place that when you think of, just makes you think of how warm this industry is. So, Chris Whitaker, whereabouts is your stagey place?
Well, I suppose for publicity reasons, it should be the Southwark Playhouse Little between the 8th of December and the 8th of January. But the actual answer is, so it would be the show that I am kind of most proud of was creating Wild Party, which I mentioned earlier with Hannah Chiswick. And the two of us sat there at the final dress run before we opened and just watching the show at the Susie Sainsbury Theatre at the Royal Academy. Very fancy. And just thinking, we created that, and watching it and being like, there is not a single thing about that show we would have changed. It's not perfect by any stretch, because I don't think there's such a thing as perfect theatre, but we were so content with what we'd created. And that moment of sitting there and the whole creative team just being uniformly proud of what we'd done is just, that's what we do this for.
That's amazing that I've just heard you say that a dress run, watching a dress run, it was like one of the best things like you could think about, because dress runs, tech runs, they're always quite stressful. So to be able to sit back and you've been able to go, we love this, is such a wonderful feeling. It's so cool.
Yeah, I love a dress run.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for joining me onto the stage place today. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. We've never had a choreographer actually come onto the podcast, so it really means a lot for you to come on and to also just find a new avenue to talk about in this industry. It's also, I think, really important what we were just saying there about well-being and coming back and being like, no one's expecting you to have the stamina that you had when you originally were in this industry. And obviously everyone's had their time off and everyone's got a unique story as well to how they were affected by the pandemic and how they've been coming back into this industry and their worries and fears also of coming back into this industry. So I think it was really important for us to talk about well-being as a creative who controls and manages a rehearsal room. It's absolutely fantastic to hear how you then bring people back into a rehearsal room and the confidentiality and the comfortableness that you want to create when bringing creatives, and maybe it's creatives and cast, their first gig coming back after the pandemic. It's really lovely to hear how you bring them all back together in a rehearsal room and make it as comfortable as you can for everybody in the room. So thank you so much, Chris, for joining me today on the Stage Place. Again, do you just want to remind people when Gatsby the Musical is on at the Southwark Playhouse?
Yep, so it's in the Little at the Southwark Playhouse from the 8th of December to the 8th of January.
Amazing. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Lovely to meet you.
And there we go, that was my interview with Chris Whittaker, choreographer of Gatsby the Musical, currently playing at the Southwark Playhouse until the 8th of January. Thank you once again to Chris for coming onto the podcast, and as we enter a new year, I want to extend my thanks to everyone this past year who has supported the podcast, from the guests to you, my audience and listeners, who continue to support and engage with what I do, bringing the attention of creative freelancers in this industry straight to your ears. So until next time, I hope you have the best possible start to 2022, and I'll see you all very soon.